Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More, with Francisco Fregonio Pena. Active Citizens Build Resilient Cities.
Water is a big deal. It doesn't matter where you live or what you do for a living. Humans' life depends on water. Regardless of the politics, the importance of having access to sufficient water in a city is without a doubt the building block of smart cities. For this reason, cities are integrating sustainability in their agenda to balance water demand and water consumption by using several approaches, from water conservation campaigns and rationalization to water shortage enforcement plans to mitigate water scarcity. Are growing human populations the main factor of water stress, or does extreme weather events such as heat waves, droughts, floods, or heavy rainfall under the influence of climate change can exacerbate water shortages conditions or even start a water crisis? Are you aware of how much water does a person use per day? Welcome to Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More weekly podcast. My name is Francisco Peña, and I'll be your host for today. In today's show, we have a special guest with us, coming all the way from Denver, Colorado. Therefore, we will talk about Greenpeace and National Geographic next week. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to Professor Tom Check, the director of the One World, One Water Center for Urban Water Education and Stewardship at Metropolitan State University of Denver. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Francisco.
It's really a pleasure. Thank you for joining. As far as I'm concerned, your center is designed to educate students about the importance of water in Colorado's economy and environment. Is that right?
I got an idea!
That's correct. Our university created our One World, One Water Center about 6 years ago to work with all of our faculty and students at the university to teach about water resources. And we work with academic departments in history and political science, art, engineering, environment, geography. It's wonderful to work with such a wide variety of students and teachers.
That's really cool. I would like to know what motivates you to come to Perugia, Italy. I mean, besides the beautiful Italian landscapes, food, and culture.
We were quite excited to learn about to be able to collaborate with the Water Resources Research and Documentation Center here at the University of Foreigners in Perugia. That really caught our attention, a similar organization where we could collaborate. Mm-hmm. We're also fascinated by the Roman history, the culture, and aqueducts in the area, to learn more about irrigation techniques in this region, and then to compare and contrast them with our irrigation and water use methods in Colorado, back in the U.S.
Considering that Colorado is one of the states with the highest amount of water resources and home of 5 primary rivers, the resource is being threatened on many fronts, including population growth, climate change, and environmental protection. How is it possible that the Colorado River runs dry, or that the cost of water nearly doubles in some areas in the past years?
We're having serious problems with the Colorado River in the southwestern United States. Most of that area receives very little rainfall and precipitation during the year. It's deserts or semi-arid areas. However, in our mountains, they receive quite a bit of snow, usually during the winter months, and that's what we rely on in the summertime to irrigate and for drinking water in our homes and in our communities.
Let's not forget that last year, 2017, the United States reached a record high in drought conditions. Over 90% of the country experienced a degree of dry conditions, from abnormally dry soil to exceptional drought. Can you tell us more about the effects of droughts in Colorado?
In Colorado, we get very concerned about low snowpacks, low snowfall in our mountains, because that will limit the amount of water we have for irrigation. And then it also creates problems for wildfires in our forests, and those are big concerns in our area.
At the moment, part of my research work is to develop disaster risk reduction maps and material for the ESRI conference that will take place in Rome next month. And one of my projects is the United States Drought Monitor 2017. I'm using USGS data repositories, and I really enjoy using the US territory for my analysis, because open data is available. I mean, anything you want, from demographics, socioeconomic, tourism, health, real estate, weather, and is stored either by day, week, or year. So this is pure gold for digital mappers. In fact, I'm using a time-lapse function to find a correlation between the drought areas and the wildfire locations. Are the wildfires a function of the drought conditions, or are influenced by other factors like wind, lack of rain, or humidity?
The drought creates the conditions for wildfires to occur, and we're very concerned about this coming summer that the wildfires could be a big problem. What'll trigger the wildfires are lightning strikes, or perhaps humans that discard a match or a cigarette or a campfire inappropriately. The other problem that creates the wildfires are high winds. And just yesterday in Denver, the winds were so strong that the airplanes could not land at the Denver International Airport. The other condition that creates wildfires is low humidity. Last week in Colorado, we had a humidity reading of 1%.
That means
the atmosphere had no moisture in the atmosphere. Combine that with strong winds, the conditions are ripe. They're perfect for a wildfire to occur.
Yesterday, when we were at class, you were mentioning the example of Washington State. I think it's a great opportunity to talk more about this and make an example of the same conditions in Spain.
Yesterday, we were looking at an annual precipitation map of the state of Washington, which is in the northwest part of the United States. There's a mountain range near Seattle in the western part of the state, and the color was a bright purple, meaning lots of rain in that area. And that's because the moisture that blows in from the Pacific Ocean from the west will then hit those mountain peaks. The moist air will rise and cool, and then the precipitation will fall in Seattle as moisture, as rain. And once those clouds get beyond the Seattle area, beyond the mountains, there's no moisture left in those clouds, and then you have a very dry area, almost a desert. So we were looking yesterday at a map of northwest Spain, very similar color, very bright purple in northwest Spain because of the mountains located there. The clouds with moisture come in from the Atlantic Ocean from the west. They hit those mountain peaks. The air cools, moisture falls, and then once the air masses go east of those mountains, the moisture's gone. It has already fallen, and it's very dry out in that area. Colorado is the same in that we have high rocky mountains in our area. The moisture from the west will hit our rocky mountains and rise cool in snow or rain. And then when you get to eastern Colorado, where I live, it's very dry because the moisture all fell in the mountains.
Microclimates within the state.
That's very true, because the microclimate of the mountain area of central Colorado is very different than the microclimates of western or eastern Colorado.
I'm loving the flux of ideas and smart talk, but now it's time to go to my boys, 120. We'll be back very soon in communicating disaster risk reduction science and more.
Hello, my name is Ritesh Patro. I am a PhD student at the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering of Politecnico di Milano, and my research topic is hydropower from climate change perspective. During the last decades, the hydropower has experienced a strong change. Renewable sources of electricity such as solar and wind, though competing with hydropower, the storage reservoirs has also came into the limelight because of the key role it plays in transferring energy from periods of high electricity production, that means water availability, to the periods of high electricity demand, which is water scarcity. Particularly in Europe, the policy of the Water Framework Directive focuses on achieving and maintaining a good status for all the water bodies, and the water quantity management is particularly important in this context to support the aquatic life, but also for all the water users. So, what me and my research group investigate is the scenarios of hydroelectric power generations. We introduce a set of potential climatic scenarios to evaluate the expected future productions. These are like future-like present scenarios, assuming future precipitation and temperature inputs be statistically equivalent to those observed during the recent past at the same location. To get a better knowledge of the future operation of the water system, it is therefore necessary to produce projections of stream flow under future climate scenarios that can be used to anticipate future changes and to design adaptation strategies. combat climate change. If you like my research work, you can follow me on my Twitter, Facebook or LinkedIn accounts by searching my name. And also you can visit our research group website, which is ecoheistblogspot.com. And remember, active citizens build resilient cities.
We are back in Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More. I believe hydropower for climate change adaptation has something to do with water scarcity, or am I misunderstanding?
You're exactly right. Water scarcity will create issues with hydropower production, because if your flows are low, you're going to have less hydropower generated. Colorado River, for example, the reservoir behind Hoover Dam is quite low, and therefore, if that continues, there'll be less water available to turn the turbines to create energy in that area.
I see. I wish great success to Ritesh and his team in his research. Moving on, I would like to mention that this summer, Tom is bringing some undergraduate students from different disciplines for a summer school here in Perugia. What is the main goal of this trip?
We're very excited to be coming here in June, and we're going to be exploring the Etruscan water history, the Etruscan well, the aqueduct, irrigation in the area. We're also going to tour some vineyards and olive farms. And then we want to compare the ancient water history of the Umbria region to our more recent water development in Colorado, where our pioneers 100 years ago created irrigation systems and water pipelines to bring water from the Rocky Mountains to our cities in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what are the assets of bringing students from different backgrounds, social science, engineering, biology, geography, all together?
It's a wonderful opportunity to bring students of different academic disciplines to look at the same issue, and here it's water, because a biologist will look at the situation perhaps from plants and animals and those sorts of perspectives. An engineer may look at water in terms of construction of aqueducts and wells. A history major will look at the ancient history of the region and compare it to our more recent history in Colorado. So each person has a diverse viewpoint of the same topic of water.
Do we have to look at the bigger picture, like the integration of knowledge from different fields in water management and decision making?
It's very important that we do that, because too often decision makers have no background in water resources. An example is Cape Town, Africa, that's running out of water, perhaps due to climate change, population growth, changing precipitation patterns. And it appears the elected officials did not understand or appreciate the significance of water management to prevent this sort of a catastrophe from happening.
Yeah, this is such a pity. I believe collaboration and strategic partnership within interdisciplinary fields can be very competitive in a way decision makers can improve the quality of life of citizens. In today's show, we had a great discussion with Professor Tom Check about water scarcity in Colorado, the potential causes of wildfires in drought areas, and the importance of strategic alliances to leverage new solutions through better brainstorming cooperation with interdisciplinary sciences.
We're so excited to bring our students to Umbria, and we've just enjoyed our time here so much. It's such a rich area of history and of culture and of language, and it's an honor and a privilege to be here.
Don't miss out our next week episode on the two biggest nonprofit organizations in the world, Greenpeace and National Geographic.
You are welcome, and you could visit our One World, One Water website on the internet, and we also have social media platforms of the WARDEC, the Water Center here in Perugia, and with Francisco Peña.
And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More with Francisco Fribronio Peña. Active citizens build resilient cities.